This programming is sponsored by the UH Health Family Care Center, offering primary care and behavioral health services on the University of Houston campus. Health insurance plans, including Medicare and Medicaid, accepted. New patient appointments and more at 832-UH-CARES.
Welcome to Party Politics. I'm Jeronimo Cortina, political scientist and associate director at the Center for Mexican American Studies at the University of Houston.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse, a political science professor at the University of Houston. Thanks for hanging out with us and talking politics in another interesting week. Lots of stuff happening domestically and foreign policy and even Florida. So we've covered all the bases of all of the, you know, national, international quandaries that the nation faces. Let's start, Jeronimo, with what's happening in Afghanistan. The Biden administration has announced they are withdrawing troops from Afghanistan beginning September 11th, 2021. That's later on this year. It's a pretty big decision to end America's longest war, which has killed more than 2,000 troops, wounded more than 20,000, and has cost more than $1 trillion. So what do you make of the decision? Is it the right decision? And what are we going to see politically moving forward?
Well, it's a very complicated question. First of all, obviously, the Biden administration said, you know, we have accomplished what we wanted to accomplish 20 years ago. Whether that is true or not, we don't know.
It's a long time. There's been enough time, but have they?
Yes, but, you know, the question is when American troops are withdrawn from Afghanistan, if there's going to be a resurgence of ISIS, if the Taliban is going to do their stuff, if the government is going to be able to basically held control of the country or not.
Yeah.
And the question is, strategically speaking, if the United States is going to have enough access to regional partners in order to have a presence, perhaps not in Afghanistan, but in the region, that would allow American forces, troops to react immediately to a threat. So a lot of things up in the air. And the question is, did we do the same thing expecting different results?
Right. The definition of crazy, you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is a really complicated question. And one obvious problem is that there's no peace in Afghanistan. I mean, this is not an indication that things are okay there, because the accord that was signed last year by the Trump administration did not lead the Taliban to lay down their arms. The Taliban has still not disavowed al-Qaeda. It's still the case that there's a real threat for a civil war and a collapse of the Kabul government. So just because there's a treaty in place and the Trump administration sort of negotiated an exit and then Biden kind of jumped the gun, it doesn't mean that things are going to move in a positive direction here. But for the administration, they're, I think, fed up. And look, I mean, Joe Biden is no novice at this, right? He was vice president. He was in charge of this. When he was in the Senate, he was on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. They basically overruled the brass from the Pentagon and from state telling them they shouldn't do this. So this is definitely a kind of Biden owns it situation, which is good and bad. I mean, he can control it, but then you own it. So you break it, you buy it.
Right.
Do they have the kind of presence via the CIA that they need? Are they able to use the effective number of troops they've got there to help? We just don't know. But they're moving on. I mean, they've said basically that there are other problems in the world. So China, Russia are bigger problems, and climate change is an international problem. So they're going to focus on other things. And to some degree, they've kind of moved in this direction because the endless war sort of criers from the left have said, it's too long, it's time to move on. So is it political pressure, or is it like a legit reason to actually exit Afghanistan?
Well, no one knows, right?
Yeah.
And that's a real question. The real question is, if these is not a priority anymore.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in public opinion, this is not a priority, right?
Yes.
I mean, the public is tired. The public wants this thing to be over with. But the question is, if this is not going to become, again, a priority, you know, in 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years.
In an abrupt and very aggressive way. No, we hope that's
not
true. But the Biden camp has said, you know, we're basically leaving the Middle East. We're not going to have a peace negotiation. There's not going to be a kind of, you know, people come to Camp David and we're going to have a cookout and solve the problems in the Middle East. So they've said we're basically leaving the region. I mean, implicitly, that's what they're saying, I should note. So this is a complication. It's going to hopefully not lead to any significant problems. But of course, with foreign policy, you never know. But hey, speaking of foreign policy, Florida is once again in the news. You've got also complications with Matt Gaetz. So we've got Gaetz continuing. Geronimo, what is going on with the congressman from Florida?
Well, everything, I think, right?
Right.
Well, it seems that there was a trip involved to the Bahamas, and it seems...
Seems nice, but...
yes, right. And it seems that Gaetz was joined by other two allies of his state legislator and then a Republican donor. Mm-hmm. So, anywho,
fast forward.
Exactly. Fast forward, it says that apparently, allegedly, maybe also the minor that is the key of this particular investigation was there in the trip. So, it's a whole mess. There has been Venmo payments from Gaetz to one of his associates, and then that associate pay these women. Allegedly for, things that I cannot mention.
Yes, we're in this family program. Podcast. No, and for which he's being investigated for, federal sex trafficking allegations. So this is very serious and he's in serious jeopardy, right? So yeah, as you say, this was one big news of the week. One thing that happened last week was that because he's Trump's BFF, he asked President Trump for a blanket pardon, which the Trump administration said, absolutely not. We are not giving you get out of jail free card. So the likelihood is he knew even before the allegation became public that there was investigation.
Right.
The Venmo transactions, which are very public and very gross. So the individual person who he had worked with, the former tax assessor collector from a county in Florida, had essentially made these payments to a young woman, and the money noted in the little tag memo was tuition and school. So very gross. And you also have him here this week, effectively, though, cooperating with federal officials. So this person might be turning on Matt Gaetz, which would mean, obviously, that he's in big trouble. Matt Gaetz is standing firm. He has released a six-figure ad buy, Geronimo, in his district and nationally that targets CNN and all the people trying to get him. There's also a billboard that popped up in his hometown of Crestview, warning drivers about how he wants to date your child. So it is not going great for him. But on the plus side for Matt Gaetz, as I argue this week in a Washington Post op-ed, scandal doesn't hit like it used to. And you have the GOP conference, some of whom are saying they're unhappy with it, and Adam Kinzer from Illinois saying he should resign. Everyone else says, we're going to wait and see. So this is a new world for political scandals, right? And the scholarship on this suggests that maybe it's okay. Like, people stick with their partisan base. You and I have written about this, so this is in keeping with sort of how we sort of find this. But scholarship also shows that Republicans are not as concerned about these allegations as Democrats are in their elected officials. So, again, does scandal really matter in a world where partisanship is so rigid?
Right. Well, I mean, looking at things from 30,000 or 32,000 feet.
Yeah. Even higher if it's Florida, because it's really humid.
Okay,
so
40,000.
Way up.
Okay, 50? All right. So the question is, how far we as a society are willing to go with these things? I mean, when you look, for example, at other countries, right? For example, when you look at France and what happens in France, it seems to me that there is a very clear distinction between your public life and your private life, right? I mean, the Gaetz matter, it's a matter that is 100%, as you said, gross. Mm-hmm. It is potentially very, 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 very illegal, right?
According to the FBI, yes.
Exactly. And the fact that a minor is involved is just, that's beyond,
yes.
I don't have words for that. But for example, in France, if a politician has an extramarital affair or whatever it is between consulting adults, the French public said, whatever. If that person is doing a good job in whatever he was or she was selected, fine. No one cares about what he or she does.
So it's a cultural difference as opposed to like a political difference.
But there is a but what I'm saying is that difference is a difference that the public there tries to be clear about what is private and what is public.
Okay.
Here, I think we tend to intermingle, right?
Yes.
One thing versus the other.
Right.
We have, if you're a public official, then basically your private life has to be an open book.
Yeah, okay.
So, gotcha. I mean, there's that, but I want to be very clear.
Yes.
The Gates thing is completely, completely weird and out of proportion and so on.
Yeah, and even if it weren't like what it is, it's still illegal, right? So an illegal activity still matters. So, but for me, the big question is, how does Matt Gaetz keep his hair that coiffured perfectly in the humid Florida and DC summers? That is really the question. It's the mousse, right? The big fluffy
no,
white.
No, it's not mousse. I think it's just the you know, the spray or
they have all
spray.
Kinds of great stuff now. Yeah, that they didn't
like
have
the
when
movie?
I was. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
well, we'll
yeah.
have to call his press people and see. Maybe they want to talk about something that's not, you know, this scandal. So we'll
exactly.
see. But hey, moving from one member of Congress to another, let's talk Texas. This week, unfortunately, Dan Crenshaw, who is a member of Congress from Houston here, he's a former Navy SEAL who lost an eye in Afghanistan in combat, has undergone emergency surgery for a detached retina. He is going to be blind for about a month, and they're uncertain as to what the ultimate prognosis is. But we are pulling for him. We are hoping that things are going to be in good shape here, because it is scary to go through that. And, you know, he has been somebody who, political differences aside, has been very much a stalwart in protecting his own belief system and in representing his district. So our thoughts and prayers to him, because this is really very terrifying, I'm sure, for him and his family.
Oh, absolutely. Only good vibes and positive vibes to yes. Representative Crenshaw.
Yes, yes.
And as you said, I mean, whether people like his style or not, yeah. I mean, he has been a good, you know, he mm-hmm. represents his constituency, right? And he takes his job very seriously.
Yes.
So that's what we need in terms of people represented in Congress,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Someone that takes it seriously, someone that is there for his constituency. So, you know, positive vibes and hopefully everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, well, on a less, I think, serious note, you've got other members of the chamber who are doing unusual things and trying to bring down the nation's pastime, Geronimo. It is a beautiful day here in Houston. Let's not play baseball. Josh Hawley, Mike Lee, and Ted Cruz this week announced at a press conference that they have accused Major League Baseball of woke virtue signaling and acting as a political enforcer for Democrats. They have threatened to take away the federal antitrust exemption from baseball, which has been in existence since 1922. This effectively allows Major League Baseball to have control over, like, who gets to own the teams, where the teams are located. It also lets them control the minor leagues and kind of where those are located. So it's definitely a monopoly, but they're allowed to have a monopoly according to this law that's now 100 years old. So the reason baseball is our national pastime is because our laws protect them in a way it doesn't protect hockey or football or all these other sports that weren't necessarily invented here. So what do you make of Ted Cruz's involvement in this? The sigh, I mean, says it all. Once again.
It's like, seriously? I mean, it's feeding, once again, the fire about these culture wars. So, you know, we have U.S. versus Citizen United a couple of years ago, right, that allowed corporations basically to mingle and insert themselves into politics, right?
Yes.
Fast forward 21 years, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Now corporations are mingling into politics, right? Not only giving checks, but are mingling and voicing their opinion, as you can make an extension of Citizens United. So the question is, okay, you voted for that. It was something that you liked because you liked those big checks that were given to your campaigns. But now that they're crossing to the other, potentially to the other aisle,
yeah,
it's like, oh my God, you should not step into the political arena.
Yeah.
Now we're going to take away your toys and you're going to be grounded and this and that, et cetera.
They're going to take their ball and
exactly
just go with it, right?
Exactly. And the bat and the glove. And,
yes, right.
So,
well, if you don't have the ball, you can't play. So
right,
you can keep your bat and ball, bat and glove, right?
So I don't understand. It's like, what do you want?
Right.
Like,
well, yeah.
Just pick one side. And again, as I said here before, politics is the free market of ideas, right? So if you are for the free market, you have to be for the free market for everything,
right,
not just for the things that you want.
It used to be, we'll talk about whether or not politicians can block people in the new public square, that is social media, in a second. But I think you're right. I mean, look at the representative. Look at the senators who are introducing this, right? They're very far to the right. Stoking the culture wars is a political tool for them. This is not a legislative action that's going to actually pass. It'll never go anywhere. It might be time to rethink this, but at this moment, when they're simply reacting to what Major League Baseball is saying in terms of the voting restrictions that are happening across the country, is just off-putting. And I think the wrong time to do it and the wrong way to do it. So obviously it's political, and as a result, it strikes everybody as being wrong. So that's a problem, but obviously that's the world we live in, and people are trying to score points in a way that gets them where they want to be. Speaking of scoring points, Geronimo, this week, the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, is once again in court suing the Biden administration to restore Trump administration's Remain in Mexico policy that requires asylum seekers to wait in Mexico while their claims are processed. Under this program, people are basically forced to live in some dangerous conditions in migrant camps in Mexico, which is obviously problematic. The Biden administration has said this is their province, that they're allowed to decide how to make this happen. But you do have Ken Paxton, although he's basically in court every week suing Joe Biden, with some success here, right? He was able to get a moratorium placed on deportations the way that we talked about a couple weeks ago. So this is not like a losing battle necessarily for Ken Paxton, but is it good policy?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's so complicated what is happening at the border. Basically, the remaining in Mexico policy was a prerogative from the former President Trump, right? Yeah. Using his executive power. So I guess I'm going to flip the question back to you and say, if the executive did the remaining in Mexico policy, right? Yeah. And that was President Trump, shouldn't President Biden be allowed to do whatever he feels like, given his executive powers?
It's a good question. The way the courts will treat this, and this actually bit the Trump administration a couple times, is that the Administrative Procedures Act requires there to be a logical series of actions that the administration takes to undo a policy, even if it's one that's done in haste or, you know, whatever. So the fact that the policy was undone so quickly is potentially something that the courts will consider that was done capriciously and arbitrarily. And this is effectively what the Attorney General and also the Attorney General of Missouri are arguing. So that's, I guess, the question. I mean, the courts are going to have to decide if this is true or not, right? And they'll take into account whether or not the policy initially was done in that manner. But as it is, like you say, it's a mess at the border. And, you know, no matter how you politicize it, it's still going to be a crisis. And so this is just, of course, politics, because Ken Paxton can use this to effectively show that he's close to Trump, which politically is good for him, and flog the federal government, who's run by a Democrat, on an issue that inflames Republican voters. So it's a win for Paxton, whether he actually succeeds in court or not. But I'm not sure it solves the problem in any way that was really recognizable.
No, absolutely not. I mean, this problem is not going to be solved unless we have, you know, a huge immigration policy reform, as long as everyone is sitting at the table taking the politics out of immigration. I know it's extremely complicated, but it's what you need to do if you want to solve the issue.
That is a second-term issue, right? That's not a first-term issue. That's a lame duck Biden issue, right? That's, you know,
right,
next time.
Right, but I mean, but when you see it, there's no incentive, right? Right. Yeah. There's no incentive for one side or the other to sit down and fix this issue. And that's a problem.
That's a good point, yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to lose your battle horse. and who are you going to blame now?
Right.
Especially in border states. I mean, we see it every single day.
Yeah.
And then for Democrats, it's also, you know, a very complicated issue because you have other constituencies are saying, what about this, right?
Yeah.
What about that? And now you're focusing on this. So it's extremely complicated. We could have a whole episode just to talk about the politics of immigration.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and speaking of constituencies being unhappy, we've got this week some interesting news involving Ken Paxton that's not about him being in court necessarily. This is kind of a surprise, but Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush, who is the grandson of President Bush and the nephew of George W. Bush, former president, is said he's seriously considering running against Ken Paxton in a Republican primary. He said on a talk radio show, that the allegations against the Attorney General are serious, that the Many of the information he's been getting from attorneys across the state indicates that they're embarrassed about Ken Paxton. This is, he says, not about conservative credentials. They're equally conservative, at least in his opinion. It's not about Donald Trump, which he says he supports. It's really about the integrity of the office. So is this going to work? I mean, we don't know if he's going to do it, but is the Bush name strong enough to carry George P. Bush in a Republican primary? Can he unseat Ken Paxton? Go.
maybe.
Okay.
I think he has name recognition. In right. the last election, he was the second statewide official that got a lot of votes
behind Abbott. Yeah.
After Abbott, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, there's name recognition and recognition. Check.
Yes. Money will come. He's a Bush.
Money will come.
They can raise money like nobody. Yeah.
Okay. What else? I mean. Yeah.
Well, look, he's Latino in a party that wants to generate more enthusiasm among Latinos. He is young. That's something Republicans need to get rid of the gray hair scenario, right? Where everybody who's leading their party is a, you know, old white man. So he, you know, mixes that up a little bit. So that's a
true,
plus.
True. But, you know, the kind of Republicanism that, you know, resonates and widely, and I'm going to say this widely with Latinos was, you know, George W. Bush kind of Republicanism.
Yeah.
If a Latino comes out in this case and has a very clear support towards, for example, President Trump, you know, that's going to create divisions within Latinos, right? There's Latinos that support President Trump, yes, of course, but there's also Latinos that do not support President Trump and anything that is closely related to President Trump. So it's going to create a lot of divisions.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's going to be the coalescing agent that the Republican Party is looking in terms of wooing Latinos to the Republican Party, at least in Texas.
It is a great point. Yeah, how close he is to Trump is really a question. And that's going to be, I think, the number one issue. He is a fiscal conservative. I mean, and so, you know, he's got, you know, the Bush name, which has resonance in some quarters in the Latino community. So, like, it could work. But here's some negatives, Geronimo. Now, this is not going to be a race that is going to be easy. This is just because Ken Paxton is in trouble politically does not mean it's going to be easy. It's going to be muddy and expensive. So George P. Bush has got some negatives, right? There have been financial disclosure issues, which he's fixed, but which are going to be part of this campaign. There are issues involving the permanent school fund, which the General Land Office runs in terms of how much revenue it's generating. And that's going to become a major question. There are concerns about agency management. When he got into office, Jerry Patterson, the person who left office, had all kinds of accusations about him P. Bush replacing people with the people with campaign ties. The maintenance, Geronimo, we cannot forget, of the Alamo is a big issue.
Yeah.
They finally settled this. We talked about this weeks ago, but this is going to become a major primary issue. So Ken Paxton has definitely got his legal problems, but the Bush name is not going to be enough to make this a clean race. So if everybody's hands are dirty, everybody's throwing mud, then in that case, I think Paxton wins given the nature of the Republican primary. So I don't think it's going to be easy. And here's one wild card. This morning, Dan Branch, who was a former state senator and ran against Ken Paxton the first time that he ran for attorney general, has issued an op-ed saying Ken Paxton basically is wrong about suing Google. So you may have another player in this battle. So we'll see how that works out. But actually, here's a sort of great transition. We have this week a player dropping out of the race, and that's Kevin Brady, Geronimo. What's going on there?
Well, Kevin Brady, that has been a member of the U.S. Congress representing the Woodland area, was first elected in 1996.
Wow.
He's one of the most senior members of old Texas delegation. He was a very powerful player within the Ways and Means Committee. He pushed forward the 2017 tax reform for President Trump. Now he is retiring and opening the floodgates once again.
Yeah. And like you say, the floodgates have been open. There's been a third turnover of Republicans in Texas in Congress. And so there's a real new generation of individuals who are representing Texas here. Brady was a traditional Republican. He was a Reagan fiscal conservative, supporter of free trade, vocal about regulations, and he never met a tax that he liked, right? As you say, he ushered through the 2017 tax reductions, which were really the cornerstone of President Trump's entire administration. I mean, when the history is written on Donald Trump, it's going to be, you know, sort of a lot of the negative stuff that happened. The only success that really is going to be the big one is going to be that one. And that's Kevin Brady all over it. So big thank you to Kevin Brady for that from Donald Trump, no doubt. But you've got here a real sea change in terms of how the party is. That
right.
is not that described, the way I describe that party is not the party of the Republican Party today, mostly.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And that is, I think, the problem for people like Kevin Brady who look at the where the party's going and say, it's not for me anymore, right? He was elected during the kind of Gingrich era when, you know, this was the bailiwick, the fiscal conservatism, free trade. That was how Republicans were winning and dominating. And now it's different. So if you're Kevin Brady, you know, why wouldn't you leave, right? That's going to be a big, interesting race. And you've also got, I think, a really interesting window into what the Republican Party is going to do next. It's going to be a big open primary, right? Lots of people from Creighton to Toth, right? All of the ideologies in between. We're going to see the full display, and who wins is going to tell us.
This resonates with what former Speaker Boehner talks about, right?
Right. Yes.
I mean, it's, you know, the new versus the old, or Republican Party, or what he calls, you know, now the Republican Party is crazy. Now you have to be the Republican Party coming back to sanity.
Yeah.
And I think that this is an indication with these Republicans retiring that the Republican Party is not going to be what it was 10 years, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And here you've seen in Brady a Republican that truly believed in Congress and truly believed in working across the aisle, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not saying that he did not push his ideas forward or anything like that, or his ideology of fiscal conservatism, but he said that, you know, there was not a single issue that Congress was not able to resolve, especially when you worked together and had the best intentions of solving the issue.
Yeah.
And that is not particularly clear today.
You mean like, you know, attacking Major League Baseball, like America's pastime, is not the way to get a lot of people to agree?
So, you know, it's worrisome that the people that were able to work across the aisle are retiring. And as you said, this opens the door for a very, very different new perspective and a new Republican Party.
And as the icing on top of that, Texas is still losing clout in Congress, right? All of the most senior members are all moving on. That means Texas's kind of role is at its lowest ebb since before the 1930s, right? So before, you know, you had, you know, Sam Rayburn in power, right? When Sam Rayburn had hair is the last time Texas was this low on the totem pole in terms of clout. So it's going to take a while before it builds it back up in Congress, but it might come. But hey, speaking of Congress, let's end on a fun note here. We're all in the middle of a pandemic, making accommodations, especially with our wardrobe. This week, Ron Paul took it to a potentially new level. The former member of Congress from the Houston area was spotted doing an interview wearing some very questionable short shorts, sometimes referred to as Daisy Dukes for an interview. Geronimo, what do you make of former Representative Paul's sartorial choices here?
I mean, I think go Ron Paul.
Thumbs up. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seal of approval.
100%.
Is that because you're wearing your jorts right now? Is that
exactly? And also because, you know, he embraced the official uniform of the pandemic.
Right.
So, you know, like, more power to you, Ron Paul. We're here with you.
Good for him. Here's what the New York Post said. They said that Ron Paul likes his shorts as small as he likes his government. So that probably says it all. But look, if I were an 85-year-old libertarian, I would probably do exactly that. Except I'd have like a ripped Scorpions concert t-shirt on too. So I would not put on the jacket. I would not put on a shirt with a button. No way. I'm going to go with a full Ron Paul next week, Geronimo. You're going to see.
Okay, and we're going to take pictures and post them on the Twitter.
No shame, no judgment, right?
No, nothing. Why? I mean,
too far into this, right?
Exactly. I guess that's it for this week, Brandon. Party Politics is recording the George B. Geary Performance Studio at Houston Public Media.
Big thanks to our producer, Troy Schultz. Special kudos to our web and graphics team here at Houston Public Media. And as always, big thanks to our audio engineer, Todd, the Lost Duke Boy, Holslander.
I'm Geronimo Cortina.
And I'm Brandon Roddinghouse. We'll see you next week.